It's a real pleasure to be here for the year, and I'd like to thank Misha Lubich and Michael Yampolsky both for the invitation to be here for the year. It's been quite great so far, and it continues to get better throughout the semester, so it's really, really nice. And thank you all for coming. So that was my formal title. What I want to show you today is how you can run into needing positive closed currents to do topology in Newton's method. So people have seen a lot about using positive closed 1-1 currents for studying the Julia sets and ergodic properties of mappings in two variables. I want to show a completely different perspective on how this can be important for studying the Fatou components. So that's the goal. I'll motivate this question by commenting about Newton's method in C2 for two general quadratic equations, which is something studied by Hubbard and Papadopoul and in a Stony Brook preprint. And then I'll focus on a very specific degenerate case in which I can actually solve all the problems for the topology of the basins to the level that I wanted to, and then explain, if I have time, how what I learned from this might extend back to the non-degenerate case. So what I'm interested in is Newton's method to solve two equations like the following: x squared plus axy minus x equals 0, y squared plus bxy minus y equals 0. I'll write this schematically as f of xy equals 0. The Newton map is always just the following. It's always just n of xy is equal to xy minus df at xy inverse times f of xy. And while I'll often be just referring to the equations that I'm considering solving with Newton's method, I'll actually be doing dynamics solely with n. So the next thing to say is to just outline some of the basic properties of this Newton map that will carry over to the degenerate case, which I'll be also considering. And please feel free to ask questions at any point. I don't want to forget to say something that's important or...
So
A and B are constants. Yeah. Exactly. Parameters. And N is a map from C2 to C2. Sometimes I'll blur the line and write P2 to P2. It extends to P2 with points of indeterminacy. In fact, there's points of indeterminacy in C2. So let me just outline the basic facts. The first fact is that the topological degree is 4. So many of the mappings that people study in complex dynamics in two variables are actually Henan mappings, which have topological degree 1. So this is different. This is actually maybe more familiar to people studying polynomial dynamics in one variable, because you have instead of critical points, you actually have critical curves, maps many to one. In fact, generically 4 to 1. Okay. Critical value locus. In fact, the critical value locus is two Riemann surfaces. I'll call these, I haven't used C and D yet, have I? C and D, the two parabolas. Through the four roots. It's a little bit more difficult to describe the critical points locus. It's just the inverse image of these, but these are nice because they're canonically isomorphic to C. In fact, it helps for drawing computer pictures because you could just naturally parameterize the critical value locus and look inside of it and see the intersection with the basins. Yes? What is the algebraic degree? I think it's 3. And in fact, this is a question that's particularly relevant for ergodic theory type issues. Von Gedge has recently proven some nice results about the balance between topological degree and algebraic degree. And I think if the topological degree is significantly higher, like in this case, you get nice properties like this. I'm taking a completely different approach. So the next comment is the invariant lines. For which I'll have to draw a picture. I'll schematically draw everything in R2, and you should think C2. So these equations are normalized so that they have, here's the origin, here's 1, 0, here's 0, 1, and here is some point alpha, beta, where alpha and beta depend upon A and B, but non-trivially. And I'm going to draw the six lines. I'm better at the degenerate case. So I'm going to draw the lines through each pair of roots. And got them all. Good. When you get too close to the chalkboard, these things always tend to fail on you. So each line between a pair of roots is invariant under N. Call this R1, R2, R3, R4. And furthermore, the dynamics on each of these lines is the dynamics of the Newton method to solve a quadratic equation with these two roots. So it's in fact conjugate to z goes to z squared. So these lines are sort of the only place where the dynamics becomes truly simple. And consequently, on each of these lines, each of these lines only intersects two of the basins of attraction. If the lines will be invariant, the points of intersection between the lines have to either be roots, fixed points, or have to be points of indeterminacy. So we have the four roots, but then we have three additional points. I'll call this one Q, P, and the one down here I'll call R, and these are points of indeterminacy. Meaning, well, the map just isn't defined there. If you approach along various different directions to that point, your mapping will take different values. It may even, in some special cases, depend upon the quadratic germ of approach. So, and what is the last essential thing to say? Well, you can make some immediate comments about the topology of the basins of attraction without really knowing too much a priori. And let me just say that I'll always denote the basins of attraction as W of Ri, the basin of Ri under iteration of N. And in fact, you can prove that in this case, the basins are each basin is path connected. This is for a reason very similar to why the basin at infinity for a polynomial in one variable is path connected. Each of the basins is a single forward and backward invariant point, the root, and you can use this to generate the said path. Okay, this is actually may seem not so surprising, but if you look at computer pictures, it's not at all obvious that this is true, and I think Hubbard and Pathotopoul actually had to think about this for a while to realize that this was true. But the other interesting thing, this is where I start to come in, is that if you look at the basins of attraction, you get the following sort of fundamental dichotomy. If you look at the first homology, W of Ri, Z coefficients, coefficients will always be z unless otherwise mentioned, which won't actually happen. This is either trivial, which theoretically can happen, or it's infinitely generated. So this is, in fact, also the same as for the basin of attraction at infinity for a polynomial. So it's not a big surprise, but proving for sure that one or the other happens for a specific A and B can be quite hard. So a way to show this is that the action of the Newton map on H1 and star from H1 of W of Ri to itself is nilpotent. Nilpotent in the following sense: for any element of H1, there is an iterate which maps it to a trivial element. Eventually, you're in a small ball centered at the root, which is contractible. So this nilpotence and the fact that you can take a one-cycle perturbate away from the critical value locus and pull it back gives you this dichotomy. Any questions on that? Why? Well, you can show that, supposing that you can always take an element and pull it back to get an element of higher nilpotence, then you an element of nilpotence k cannot be expressed as a linear combination of lower nilpotence, just by definition. So this is sort of what I realized about a year and a half ago. But then there's the question of how do you prove this, and how do you even make this statement meaningful with the points of indeterminacy? It's not quite clear what you should do about these points of indeterminacy when you're studying the homology of the basins. So you have the issue, supposing you have some cycle gamma, supposing it just so happens that gamma, this is sort of a stupid looking one, supposing the gamma is the boundary of some sigma, where sigma happens to only exist if sigma goes through one of the points of indeterminacy. The points of indeterminacy, while they're real codimension 3, they act like the real codimension 2. Because when you blow them up, they're two-dimensional. It's not a completely satisfactory explanation, but this is the motivation. So suppose P is in here. If the only chain for which gamma is a boundary of goes through a point of indeterminacy, should we consider this gamma to be trivial or non-trivial? Well, you can further ask if this chain is smooth, if the tangent space of the chain at P, if that direction is mapped entirely within the basin, and this is all within some W of Ri, some specific basin, except for P, if that tangent space maps forward into the basin, should we then consider the loop to be trivial? So there's an issue here. And we're just going to resolve this completely using blow-ups, this tool from algebraic geometry for dealing with points of indeterminacy, and actually curves of indeterminacy, if you have such curves, if you're in a higher dimension. But that's the issue, and that's the main thing that makes this question actually hard. And this is what will also lead to the fact that we really need to use currents to study the topology of the basins instead of just using sort of finite tools. So that's the gist. Now let me get into the details of this. I'm going to look at the case where the parameter A is 0. It's a whole lot easier. When the parameter A is 0, you can check that the Newton map is a skew product, meaning that the first component depends just on x, second component depends on x and y. It's a huge simplification, but it provides a model for trying to study this topology. So for the rest of the talk, except possibly the last 5 minutes, if I'm lucky, we'll be talking about A equals 0, so degenerate case. In this case, I'll just literally write down the Newton map, although its details are not completely essential to us. And I'll denote this as n sub 1 of x, and I'll just write y, even though it's not appearing, and n sub 2 of xy. So n sub 1 is the Newton map for solving just the first equation. It is conjugate to z goes to z squared, and every point with x, with the real part of x not equal to 1/2, either is super attracted to the line x equals 0 or the line x equals 1. So let's just draw the schematic diagram here, similar to that one. And then I'll draw a dashed line here to correspond to the real codimension 1 subspace, real x equals 1/2. Everything that's schematically described as being to the left of this is super attracted to the line x equals 0. Everything to the right of this is super attracted to the line x equals 1. So write x sub L, or x is our space somehow, x sub L is the left half. X sub R is the right half. Each of these spaces is, these are the open subs, the open in the complement of this dashed line. Each of these spaces is forward invariant, and every point in it, in each of these spaces, is super attracted to one of the two lines. Excuse me. Now, let me draw the critical value parabola C. The critical value parabola D will degenerate to these two parallel lines. Well, kind of a parabola in the picture. So this is C, and C, now that we're looking into specifics, looking at C will play a crucial role in studying the topology. The next thing to mention, the dynamics on each of the invariant lines, the conjugate to z goes to z squared. Z goes to z squared has an invariant circle, modulus v equals 1. Everything on one side is attracted to 0. Everything on the other side is attracted to infinity. I'll call the corresponding invariant circles in the line x equals 0 to be S0, S lower 0. The corresponding circle in here, S lower 1. And you can prove, using the holomorphic motions and or other tools, that there are superstable manifolds of these invariant circles, which I'll draw in, say, green. Notice how it's going through Q and through P. I'll denote this by W0 and W1 for the superstable manifold in the circle in the line x equals 1. Of course, this is very schematic. These are real three-dimension analytic varieties. That's what you can prove about them, except that they're only analytic varieties after we deal with the indeterminacy. Okay, so let me say one more comment. Here, P and Q are in XL. This is not true for all B, but we can easily restrict to B, for which it is true, and just study that case. V is in omega, which is the set modulus 1 minus B is greater than 1, then P and Q are in XL. And in fact, if we're in the opposite case, not the borderline case, but if we're in the case where this modulus is less than 1, then there's an easy affine conjugacy to one of these situations. So we can restrict to this case. Okay. Let me state the theorem. It's probably easier. I haven't looked at it. theorem, this is the theorem from my thesis at Cornell, is W of R1 bar, W R2 bar closures of the appropriate two basins in XL in XR. So this is including W0 and W1. Then H1 of W bar 1 bar, H1 of W bar 2 bar are infinitely generated. And this is for all B and omega. Whereas for B and omega, if the superstable manifold W1 intersects C, then the corresponding homology groups are also infinitely generated. Otherwise, they are trivial. In fact, you should expect a completely symmetric statement. Uh-huh. That's okay. Both statements are for B and omega. I could do so if the intersection of W1 with C is non-trivial, these homology groups are infinitely generated. So in fact, a symmetric statement should be true. It should be that if W0 intersects C is non-empty, then those two homology groups are infinitely generated. And otherwise, they're trivial, except that B and omega forces an intersection between W0 and C. So, okay. And let me just state the corollary. If W0 is transverse, to C, or W1 is transverse to C, then you can replace the appropriate basin, the closure of the appropriate basin with the basin itself. So that was the original goal, was to actually study the topology of the basin, not its closure. So, well, I'm leading to that. I'm actually going to make a comment which will force me to come back here and modify this symbol XL to indicate that I've done blow-ups. So, we already had this question about indeterminacy of whether the homology class of a one cycle is trivial or not based on the tangent space of the chain that it's a boundary of. But there's a further issue is that these W1 and W0 are not real analytic varieties until you blow up at points of indeterminacy and effect at all of their inverse images. You can write down an equation that's very similar to the scattering theory equations for linearization in one variable dynamics for W0 and W1, which require all iterates of the Newton map being defined on XR and XL in a big open set. Yeah. Well, I don't know. Butcher formula. So, I really rely upon blow-ups. And what I'll say is I'll replace XL with XL infinity, and I'll explain what XL infinity is. It's a modification of XL using blow-ups at P and Q and all inverse images of P and Q in order to make all iterates of N well-defined. So let me explain what that space is. I'll put it here. So first of all, I'll explain what the blow-up of C2 at the origin is. So this is just the hypersurface. C2 cross P1, satisfying the equation XY, is enough. So this is a hypersurface. In fact, it's a manifold, a complex manifold of dimension 2, covered by two charts. It's independent of your choice of coordinates, so you can do this on a complex manifold with no problem. And, question? So it's independent of your choice of charts. You can do this without any problem. And in fact, there's nothing special about the origin here. You can just move it anywhere you want. So the issue is, and then you get the following. You get C0 tilde projected down to C2 by the natural projection. And if you had, I'll draw a dashed, if you had a rational map with a point of indeterminacy at 0, 0, often this point of indeterminacy will be removed by lifting the map to being a map from the blow-up, from the space with the blow-up. So that's the general idea in the simplest case. Of course, if your map has more difficult indeterminacy, you may have to blow up many times, blow up on what's called the exceptional divisor. We call it projection pi inverse of 0, 0. We'll denote it as E sub 0, 0. Exceptional divisor, and you may blow up and realize now you have an point of indeterminacy on the exceptional divisor. You may blow up again and again and again, but eventually, if your map is analytic, you can do this, and you can have a finite number of blow-ups to resolve the indeterminacy. So, what I want to do is I want to do this in XL at P and Q and all of their inverse images. Now this is something John Hubbard was originally doing, I guess, and it's sort of a big, complicated thing. But it's not that bad when you get used to it. You can just do the following. So here we have XL, N. I'm using a dashed arrow to indicate that it has points of indeterminacy. I'll blow up at P and Q, creating XL1, pi1, and then, so long as there are no exceptional cases, N extends to the blow up at these P and Q, creating a genuine map. A genuine analytic map from XL1 to XL. Of course, we want a dynamical system. We want to map one space to the same space, not one space to a different space. So, well, you can also put XL1 here. So we'd extend it n. I'll just write n again. We can consider n to be a map from XL1 to XL1. But it will have points of indeterminacy at the inverse images of P and Q. They are now mapped, they are now single points mapped to the exceptional divisors at P and Q. So they are points of indeterminacy. So, well, you can keep playing this game. And obviously, you never quite finish. But if you do an inverse limit, you kind of finish. You get a space and a map from that space to itself. So I'm going to write that XL infinity is equal to the inverse limit of XL k pi k, and n, I may put an infinity here, although I'll drop it almost immediately, is the induced map from XL infinity now to itself. XL infinity is a modification of XL in which XL is an open dense set. So this is the space I'm really planning to work in. Yeah. Yeah. So we're actually lucky, very lucky in this case. In this case, because the first variable is just conjugate to z goes to z squared, the inverse images of P and Q go out the ends, the topological ends of XL. Hence, they don't accumulate, and hence, you can still do this without having some very terrible topology at the points of accumulation. If you have points of accumulation, there's this fantastic tool called the Fairy Blow-Up, and John Hubbard is the person to talk to about this one.
So
yeah.
The first two points to be blown up are which?
P and Q.
Q
is not on the dotted line.
So
for considering the topology of the basins in XL, then it would be irrelevant. There are two more points of indeterminacy on that dotted line, which is a three-dimensional subspace. And they do cause some delicate issues. No, I'm saying that I do need to blow up all inverse images.
Yeah.
For the first step, I just need to blow up P and Q once. Exactly. But then, because they happen to not be on C. But then inverse images may at some point be on C, in which case you will have to blow up twice, and life continues in this way. Once you've blown up twice, then at every inverse image, you'll definitely have to blow up twice, maybe more times. But at P and Q, you only have to blow up once. And on a bare generic set, you only have to blow up once at every inverse image, which is actually slightly hard to prove, surprisingly. So this is the space I'm working on. That's the map I'm working with. I'll think XL. I'll think N given by this equation. And if I have to do some delicate analysis near one of the points of indeterminacy, then I'll go into the blow-ups. So that's the plan. Except for the following problem, that the topology of our ambient space has been modified. We've lost indeterminacy in the mapping, but we've gained a lot of topology. H2 of XL infinity is isomorphic to Z to the L union P1, and I'll explain what this is supposed to mean. This is the product over Z via this set. L is the set of exceptional divisors. P1 is the fact that I slightly lied to you, and I'm considering N to be from C cross P1, C cross P1. I compactified in the vertical direction. So here is some infinitely generated H2. This will give us indeterminacy because we will have candidates for non-trivial one cycles, and we want to link them with something. This will give us indeterminacy in our linking number instead of indeterminacy in our mapping. It's a trade-off. And that's what will force us to use currents to do the topology. Any other questions? Homology. Okay. Are you happier? Good. good. Okay. It's a sum. It's much better than the product. Okay. Good. Thank you, Adrian. Okay. So now what I want to say is I want to give you a description of what my potential is. There a question? Sure. So this is it is countably generated. L is a countable set. So let me just in a very rough way sketch for you my candidates for non-trivial homology elements, and then I'll focus on how you prove that they're non-trivial homology elements, overcoming that difficulty. So well, the nice thing about this skew product is that the second coordinate is just a rational map of degree 2 dependent upon x. So you can use all of the standard, most obvious knowledge of ramified coverings to generate a lot of loops. So we'll take a line above some point, we'll take a complex line above some point where of some point x for which W0 intersects C. And that will be this line here. I'll draw it like this. And supposing this is the first such line under the forward images for which W0 intersects C, you'll just have some W0 dividing this line into two pieces. One is in W of R1, one is in W of R2. Something like that. So long as we are at this point of intersection, the ramified covering has the critical values on W0. So we take a pullback, and we immediately get something. You could use the Riemann-Hurwitz formula to compute what's happening if you wanted to, but we immediately get something like this. This is just a vertical line. This is x equals t. T is, say, this point right here. First is the fact that W0 doesn't intersect C in an appropriately small neighborhood of the line x equals 0. So we can map forward until we have a last time. And then this happens because of the dynamics in x. So we keep pulling back, and we get vertical planes that are divided into some exponentially large number of distinct components by W0. It's really no big surprise, no big deal. Something like this. And each one of these single curves in W0 will be a candidate for a non-trivial homology element. And I'll link them with an appropriate object to show that they're non-trivial. So let me choose one of them. I'll call this curve gamma. And I'll just say, I'll assign some number to gamma. I'll say size of gamma is equal to 1 over 2 to the n, where n is the number of forward mappings to get to here. And there's a slight adjustment if you hit the critical value locus again, but this is just something describing how many times forward you get to here. So I want something. I want to generate some sort of a linking number of objects
with some appropriate, what shall some appropriate thing from H1 of W0 into R, which is well defined. That's the goal. And I want to do this so that LK of gamma lambda is equal to size lambda size of gamma. As long as you can do this, then using the a priori dichotomy, which has disappeared, you can show that the first homology is non-trivial and hence infinitely generated. So that's the strategy. Question? Okay. The strategy is that we'll find some appropriate object for which we can have a well-defined linking number with. For this object, it'll just so happen. Little gamma is just some simple closed curve in here, in W0. Just you choose some curve in there, and there's some combinatorial way based on the ramified coverings to assign it what I call, in a sort of hokey way, size. And this size gets small as you take three images. And I want to make a linking number that reflects this combinatorics. In fact, we'll have a linking number which eventually will actually have dense image in R, but that's not enough to prove that the homology is infinitely generated, but the a priori dichotomy gives it to you. So that's the plan. Is everybody clear on the plan? Okay, so the point is, with linking numbers, people often talk about linking numbers between two one cycles in S3, because S3 has trivial second homology. And let me show you where you use that. If this board becomes S3, if I take gamma and say beta, and suppose gamma is equal to the boundary of sigma, then we define the linking number. So here's sigma, and there's an intersection there. The linking number of gamma beta is equal to the intersection number of the homology classes. These have complementary dimensions, so there's an intersection number. And, well, you prove that this is well defined, because if gamma equals boundary of sigma prime, then, well, you might also get gamma dot sigma prime, but H2 of S3 equal to 0 implies sigma equals sigma prime in S3 relative gamma. H2 of S3 relative gamma. So this is where you're using that H2 of S3 is trivial. We're working in XL infinity, which has very non-trivial if second homology. If second homology is infinitely generated. So if this weren't the case, if H2 of M is still three-dimensional, if H2 of M is not trivial, you have to restrict to beta such that the class of beta dot the class of sigma is equal to 0 for all sigma in H2. This is a submodule of H2, which I don't know what terminology other people use for it. I call it the linking kernel. So the linking kernel of the cycles LZ1 is equal to the set of beta with this property.
Okay, so the goal is to look to find what LZ2 is. We need the dimension of our things we link to add up to the dimension of our manifold minus 1. So we'll look at LZ2 of XL infinity, and we'll realize that we don't have enough objects to link with. And that's what will make us do currents. So when you compute this homology, you can actually compute the intersection product as well, and you realize that LZ2 of XL infinity is really small. It's just the submodule generated by P1. Aha. So these were one cycles. This was a three-dimensional manifold. Now our ambient manifold is real four-dimensional. So we want to link between one-dimensional objects like gamma and two-dimensional objects, so Z2. Okay. So this is actually Z to the P1. So it's just a single copy of Z generated by P1. P1's a vertical line. It naturally intersects each of these vertical lines trivially. Hence, there's no way we're going to get a non-zero linking number between a gamma and this object. So I propose a completely different thing to try to link with. And we'll take a limit of appropriate homology-esque objects, positive, closed, 1-1 currents, and we'll see that that works. So let me go back over to here. Blue, I haven't used. This line I'll call L2, and the x-axis I'll call L1. It just so happens that the fundamental class of L2 minus the fundamental class of L1, now this is, I'm speaking slightly informally here because these are not compact, but when we go to positive closed 1-1 currents, that problem will vanish, is actually in LZ2 of XL, but not infinity, XL1. You see, each of these lines intersect P and intersect Q the same number of times. You take their difference intersects P and Q both trivially, so this is in that linking kernel. Okay. Just by invariance, the fundamental class of the kth inverse image of L2 minus the fundamental class of the kth inverse image of L1 is in LZ2 XL k plus 1. Just by invariance. Okay. So, we naturally want to take a limit of these homology classes. And we also have to make clear what I mean by homology classes, because these aren't quite closed manifolds. You can't, the fundamental class isn't quite clear. So, what I'll do is I'll choose an appropriate board to erase. And I'll switch to currents. I'll switch to positive closed 1-1 currents. And in the interest of time, I won't go very deeply into the theory of currents. I'll just state that you can express the following. This is the Poincaré-Lalonde formula. We can express n to the minus k of L2 or L1. I'll write L1 here, just for simplicity. This is as a what do I call Z11 plus. This is dual 2-1-1 forms with compact support, dual to smooth 1-1 forms with compact support. This guy is equal to 1 over 2 pi DDC in the language of currents, which I don't plan to give a course on in the minus 2 minutes that I have, DDC of log modulus, and then the equation satisfied by this algebraic curve. And the k, xy, 2. Similarly, you can do a similar thing for n to the minus k of L2. It's an appropriate change just based on the equation for the second line. And, well, you still can't quite do a limit with these, but now you can start dividing out, and you can do a limit. So I'm going to look at 1 over 2 to the k, 1 over 2 to the k, etc. I'll define this to be, so this to be lambda 1k, the other one to be lambda 2k. Just these are normalized so they intersect any vertical line with charge 1, if I got my exponents right. No, it's actually 2. The reason is that the map in the second coordinate is a rational map of degree 2 in Y. I'm not going to the projective, I'm not going to the homogeneous coordinates upstairs. It always is 3 somehow in the more classical works on this. But in this case, I have to divide by 2 to the k. I can tell you afterwards if I can show you. So, anyway, now we still have the following. We still have, we've just divided, so we have lambda 2k minus lambda 1k is in this linking kernel. And now you can show that if you take a limit as k goes to infinity, that these converge to 1 over each respectively to 1 over 2 pi ddc of a plurisubharmonic function. So you have some sort of a thing in the limit of your homology classes, which I call lambda 1, lambda 2 is equal to limit. Lambda 2 is equal to limit as k goes to infinity. Lambda 2k, same for lambda 1. These guys are in the linking kernel. Lambda 2 minus lambda 1 is in LZ 1, 1 plus of XL infinity. And if you define the linking number, gamma lambda 2 minus lambda 1 is equal to the integral over sigma, where gamma equals the boundary of sigma. Sigma should be chosen to be smooth. You can perturb it appropriately. Of lambda 2 minus lambda 1, you get a well-defined linking number, which gives you modulo sub-exponents, possibly. Exactly this, you get that the homology of the separator of W0 is infinitely generated. With some algebraic tricks, you can extend it to get the theorem. So, thank you. Aha, this is a big concern. In fact, if this were true, you'd have to be very careful about the linking number. It probably wouldn't work. There's a neighborhood of W0 on which the plurisubharmonic functions that you get as limits are actually harmonic, so it's not, so the support's bounded away. Mm-hmm. So they accumulate to, they don't actually, they accumulate to somewhere inside the basin. Lambda 1 accumulates to some, there's an open set around W1, W0, separating it from the support of these currents. Similar to the fact that if you look at a polynomial in one variable, look at the potentials by assigning charge to inverse images, then there's an open set around infinity where this potential is harmonic. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so things are coming out the ends of XL. It's getting complicated.
at the ends. I guess I don't see why. I don't claim to have proven here by any means why the support doesn't accumulate to W0, but I can do it.
Talking about one vertical line, which is not a real part of that ecosystem, then the support of the current is away from W0, which goes to zero.
As you go to the end. Well, okay. So, my theory is that the support of this current is a lamination by Riemann surfaces over, if you blow up at one of the roots, if you blow up at root one, you get an action on the exceptional divisor, which is the quadratic mapping. And I claim that the support of these currents is actually supported over the points that converge to the Julia set, so there's some J in here, and the support of the current is some nonlinear cone over that. And the fact that this point at infinity on the exceptional divisor is super attracting in this polynomial dynamics gives you some sort of a buffering neighborhood on which the plurisubharmonic function is actually harmonic. You can actually, I may get a sign wrong here, you can get G of XY is basically G of, I hesitate to write it because I'll get it slightly wrong, but you can express G of XY on the basin in terms of the Green's function on the exceptional divisor with a minor adjustment, and this harmonic neighborhood of affinity on the exceptional divisor extends out. W naught is green. W naught's up there. So you get this conical type neighborhood that comes up. Okay. Any other questions? Certainly a good thing to be worried about. Okay.